Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
51551 is our text number. Gillian, good afternoon.
How are you, Joe?
How are you?
Not doing too great, actually.
Where are you living at the moment?
We're living in Munster.
Okay, and you're living in a garage. That's what you said in your note here. How did you end up in that scenario?
Well, basically, we had a company. It was a substantial company. And when the recession hit, the company went into liquidation. And basically, we lost everything. And we've been the last 5 years trying to fight with the bank to keep our home. We had one home repossessed by them in February in 2010. Mm-hmm. And we have got a 3-month warning that where we are now is actually going to be going for repossession in the High Court within 3 months. We're currently at the moment we've just put in another appeal to stop it. You know, hopefully it'll delay to give us a bit of time to try and figure something out. Absolutely desperate. You know, if they take this back, we'll essentially be homeless, with still owing the bank €400,000. You know, we have the residual debt from the first property that they took.
Okay.
And, like, we are inevitably living in a converted garage. We had bought a site with a derelict cottage.
Yeah.
And at the time, you know, family gave us money to build the garage part of it. So that's what we are actually living in at the moment. You know, it's the outside of it isn't habitable for children. You know, we've 2 children that can't even go outside and play. You know, because we can't move forward and because we can't get a decision because we don't know whether we're going to be left here or not.
And how are the children coping with all this moving? Where do they think they're living, by the way? They think it's a house, do they?
Well, actually, we thought it was a house until before Christmas. We were actually driving one evening and we were admiring all the lights and houses. On the Christmas trees and in the gardens, and our eldest son said, when can we live in a proper home like any other people's families, you know? And he mentioned some children in his class, and I swear to God, we nearly got stabbed. That was the first moment when we realised they actually know, you know, when this started happening, they were toddlers, they knew no different. You know, they're getting older, they're asking questions. They're seeing us whispering constantly. This is consuming us every day. I am on anti-anxiety and antidepressant medication. I'm so dosed in medication that I function. They don't have a mother. They have someone that cares for them, but they don't have an emotional mother because the unfortunate part of the whole lot of this is... Now, we don't want to come across as victims here because, you know, we are at fault as well for not making full payments. But unfortunately, with me taking antidepressants is I can't choose which emotion that shuts off. So I can choose that it shuts off the emotions that deal with banks. It shuts off all my emotions. So basically, I refer to myself as a robot.
You feel flat in terms of everything?
Numb. That's the words. Totally numb. I'm void of any emotion whatsoever.
And your plea is to the bank, will they do a deal? You're offering to...
Yeah, we have offered, like we've been asking for deals for the last 4 years, which have been refused. You know, what we're asking them now is to shelf half it for a 20-year period. Now, we're not asking anything that they're not doing for other people, you know. We've offered them, we pay €750 a month to them.
Okay.
We haven't been making full payment, but we have been making €750 a month. We, before Christmas, offered them €1,000 and they refused that. They just repossession. They just want us out. We're now out of the protection of MARP, which means that they can bring us to the High Court. You know, we're not protected by them anymore because we're ineffectively in breach of contract, which they're totally within their rights. But we're begging, please give us the opportunity to make this better, you know. And we can make it better. And the ironic part of it, which I've stated to the bank in a letter only last week, is that they're saying that they're not seeing that we can move forward with this. Mm-hmm. And I told them, but if anxiety, stress, everything is holding us back. So ironically, they want us to move forward, but these negotiations, this stress is holding us in such a place that we just walk around constantly and we just function, you know.
And is there any, have you investigated all the other routes, you know, the personal insolvency, bankruptcy?
Yeah, we have. We've been to MABS, we've been to New Beginnings last week with New Beginnings, and bankruptcy. We're not eligible for personal insolvency. It's bankruptcy, and basically the chances of keeping the place with that is worse if you're in bankruptcy.
So you just want to try and keep that roof over your head, inadequate and all, as it is at the moment.
Yeah, to us, do you know what, Joe? People stress, you might just walk away. Just imagine, can you go home tonight and imagine not going to the house that you've lived in or the home that you have? You know, a lot of people say, oh, just walk away and declare bankruptcy and it'll all be over. It won't be over. We'd be only starting a new hell. You know, like, this is where we want our children to have memories and a home. You know, and we're just begging the bank to please, please just give us this chance. You know.
And you're offering €1,000. You're paying 750 at the minute. You're offering them €1,000, which they've refused to accept, you say.
Yeah.
And but where are you getting the €1,000 from?
My husband is self-employed.
Okay. So he's working at everything, is he?
Yeah, everything. You know, he's gone constantly. We mightn't, like, see him only at 10 at night. Mm-hmm. You know.
And you the kids, and in the firm, yeah, the two of you had, there was 30 people employed.
Yeah, there was, yeah.
And was it connected with the building industry?
It was, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that went under. He's self-employed. So do you get any state help?
No.
Why not?
Child benefit, I guess.
Yeah. But I mean, in terms of a weekly payment, child benefits every month, and it's relatively small when you divide it up now, but...
Yeah, yeah.
Are you entitled, are you entitled to any?
No, we wouldn't be entitled to anything. You know, but Dave being self-employed, you know, he can make a wage, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. He does get work, you know what I mean? And so that isn't... The bank just... I think they just want to clean up their books. You know, I have stressed that what I feel that they're doing is they're looking at, okay, dealing with these people for another 20 years, how much is that administration cost, how much is this, how much is that, just get rid of it now and save all that money in the long term. You know, I know if they get us out and evict us, there's going to be a shortfall, you know. Mm-hmm. And they're probably going, look, it's better off to write that off than deal with this for 20 years.
And what are they saying? They're saying, what, you're not viable, is that it?
Yeah.
There's no hope. They're saying there's no hope of getting our money back off this couple. Let's get the property and move it on and close that file and start.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, yeah. That's just the ins and outs of it, basically.
And what do they want? They won't accept €1,000 a month. What do they want now? Do they want the... You owe them 400,000.
Yeah, yeah. They want basically voluntary sale or voluntary surrender. That's what our options are from them. You know, they're not even... Like, we have went in last week with another appeal, you know, of asking them to shelve some of it. You know, not asking them to take it away and get rid of it. Just give us a bit of breathing space to get our lives back on track, to build up our lives again so that we can move forward and deal with this and get this sorted. You know, it's... I can't even describe what it's like every day to cope with this. Do you know what I mean? It's just completely horrendous, you know, and the fact that essentially we blame ourselves then because we're causing this to the children, you know what I mean? That they don't get proper parents because we're constantly meeting people, consumed people, trying to, you know, research, do the whole lot. So they're being constantly put in the back burner because we're like, we need to sort this. And if we don't sort this soon, God only knows what's going to happen.
And your argument with the bank is, please, can we draw up a plan?
Yeah, to allow us to stay.
And that will give you some certainty, some routine almost. You pay €1,000 a month, so you're working towards that. You know what you have to pay out. You don't have that daily. But instead, what's hanging over your head now is eviction.
Yeah, it is.
And what's the next step? Is there a court case or...?
It would be... we have 3 months warning that they are going to issue proceedings. Mm-hmm. I don't know how long proceedings actually take, you know, but it is inevitably in the High Court. And New Beginnings told us last week that basically if you go into the High Court, the judge can't use his discretion. It's not that he can look at it and say, well, you've been making payments, you know, or you've been trying to do this, or you've been trying to communicate with the bank. He just has to, we're in breach of contract, so they will get an eviction order on us.
And when they repossessed your original family home, how did that come about? What was the mechanics there?
Basically, they sent a letter wanting repossession of it, and this was kind of new to us at the time, and panic and the whole lot that we just gave them possession of the house. You know, what we looked at the time was that was worth more than the site. So at that stage, the belly hadn't fallen out that much out of the property market. So we were like, okay, if we give them the site, we're going to have more, you know, they'll sell it for a lot less and we'll have, how do I describe it, more of a debt. We thought by giving them back the house, they'd be able to sell it, bring our debt really down then, so we only have a small debt. But they didn't, you know, they sold it for a lot less more than the market value, and we're now left with basically up to €150,000 from that debt as well.
And who decided on the price they would accept? That was the bank themselves, wasn't it?
That was the bank themselves, yeah.
And then the difference is what you now owe them.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You know.
So you've no house in that sense. And the property you're in now, what you had a derelict cottage and you were hoping to build on it at some stage, and now and when you say you converted a garage, what does that mean to live
in? Well, we had planning permission to build a garage, and it was a small structure, and we said, right, okay. Billy said, look, we can give you money to put something on that. So we actually built the garage and we're living in it. You know, we put in a kitchen, some bedrooms and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, like now it does look like an odd looking house. You know,
I was
going to
say, what does it look like from the road?
Odd, really odd, we guess the amount of looks and people slow down passing, I don't even actually think people believe we live in it. Now, inside, it doesn't look as bad because it's decorated like, you know, a house.
Well, have you windows and?
Yeah, we have, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
There's a few windows,
Okay, but you were saying you didn't realise it, but you now know the children have copped that it's not a house, that it's different, say. Daddy, when can we live in a proper house like other families?
Yeah, and that was the moment where we thought, right, they're actually starting to realise now. Like, when we did first move into what we're in now, we just thought, we're going to make a decision with the bank and move forward. We didn't think we're going to be here nearly 4 years, you know, because we thought this is going to be temporary.
Yeah.
We'll move on. Like, outside, we walk out into mud. We were like, if we put stone down, is that throwing money down a black hole? Are we wasting money? Yeah. You know, I have tins of paint sitting there for the last 2 months. What's the point in painting? doing home improvements. You know, we're kind of going, the place is actually getting into disrepair because we're going, are we throwing money after money, you know?
Because you're worried the bank will get it back in a few months and it's gone completely then, no matter how much you put into it.
Exactly. We're like, that's what I'm trying to explain to them. We can't push forward because this is keeping us in limbo.
And by the way, if the bank did repossess it, what would they sell it as? Can you see it being advertised? What could you advertise it as?
Well, the market value now is 80,000. Because they can't sell it with a dwelling on it.
Because it doesn't have permission for a dwelling as such.
It's not a dwelling, it's a garage.
So a garage for sale. How much did they get for a garage?
Oh, God only knows.
Well, I know it's a very attractive two-bedroom garage inside, but from outside it is a garage, and that's all, as you say, that's all they can sell it as.
Yeah, that's all it looks like. You know, it's very embarrassing.
Well, you're doing your best for your kids, Gillian. That's not embarrassing you, and you're still powering ahead. You're still going ahead. I know you say you feel very flat at the minute, and you didn't, and nobody thought it would go on. It's now 5 years for everybody. And your sense is that the bank, what is your sense? Is your sense that you've stood still for 5 years or you've gone backwards?
Backwards. Yeah. Okay. We were very positive at the start, you know, with negotiations and everything. But it seems now the longer they're going on, they're just getting worse. We're actually going backwards. Whether we're emotionally going backwards, I don't know. Whether it's pushing us back. We're at a stage now where last year we were like, yeah, we're going to do this now and have this plans and that plans. You know, we're now, we can't even plan for tomorrow. You know?
Yeah. And we hear about people getting deals. I mean, have you heard? I mean, who are they?
I don't know. We hear about them, but apparently you have to sign a confidentiality agreement if you get a deal, so then you can't discuss it. So we don't really know who... The people are saying it. Like, New Beginnings could confirm to me that the bank we are dealing with are the hardest bank to deal with. They won't even agree to meet with them. Every other bank in the country will allow them in and talk and make deals. They have made deals for other people with other banks, but this particular bank... Mm-hmm. will not even allow New Beginnings in to meet anyone. We have in 5 years met twice with them. It's impossible. They say they'll meet you, but then it's impossible to get a meeting.
Well, have you sent them a registered letter with this offer?
Yeah.
You have?
It's gone off. Every letter, every offer we register, they come back to client, we do another offer. Last week I just sent them a letter basically begging them. And explaining how it's affecting our lives.
What do you mean begging them? What did you say in that letter, Julian?
I was like, please just allow us to stay, allow us to move forward. I said to them, allow us to laugh again. We don't laugh. There's no laughter in my house. There isn't.
Yet on the other hand, you have kept going. You are still standing.
Only just. We're at the stage now that we're falling. And I think they want that. They want to back us into a corner where we just run and run away from it and give it back. You know, they're taking the fight out of us. And I think that's the strategy. I think that's what happened with the first house. They frightened us so much that we ran. And I think... that's what's happening now, and they're actually succeeding. Because they've worn us down. We are absolutely worn down. You know?
Yeah. But you can't run away from a garage. You know what I mean? Stay where you are. Someone in the bank must see, listen, lads, we're going to repossess a garage. Yeah. What are we going to get for a repossessed garage that doesn't have permission to be a home? Okay, this family have turned it into a home and I'm sure it's beautiful and warm and cosy inside, even though it's small.
Yeah.
But you don't think they'll even see the sense of that?
No, we've tried to explain that to them.
Have you
had... there's absolutely no value on it.
Have you had face-to-face meetings?
We had one in 2010.
And then we
had another one around 3 years ago. And we haven't had another one since.
And when you send off your registered letters with your offer.
Yeah.
I don't want the name of the person, but do you send it to a local manager? Do you send it to the CEO of the bank? Where do you send it?
It goes to, we have someone that deals with our file. And it goes to them, and then they pass it on.
And they say to you when you deal with them, oh, upstairs are telling me that I have to...
Yeah. You know, it's not... We have never, ever, I beg them to allow us to talk to the person that makes the decision. We have never talked to the person that's actually made the decision. We only get to talk to the people around them. We cannot directly talk to anyone that has the power. I have asked them before, please, just let me talk to someone who has the power to say yes or no. And we've never got it.
And Gillian, you've thought about, as you say, you think about little else, unfortunately.
Yeah.
About what would happen if they did come after the garage. They did get the eviction order out of a garage. Where would you go then?
I don't know.
Because you did get some, you said you did get some help, was it from your family to try and convert the garage into a bedroom and a kitchen and that?
Yeah, but I don't know where we go. You know,
And when I think of your business, like so many, you have 30 people working for you, 30 families working.
Yeah.
Are they all in other words, there's, and it's, I've heard it so many times, for people who are employers, like good employers who are running businesses and family businesses, there's never any, because the employees have suffered as well.
Yeah.
There's never a tooth fairy, whatever, that's going to come back and say, oh, listen, we've all chipped in and you were so good to us for the years we were working in the company, and we know you won't be given dole, you won't be given any state help. That's a dead end as well, isn't it?
Well, basically what happened was when we were building this garage, a lot of them would have helped out free charge labour.
Oh, brilliant.
You know,
brilliant.
So kind of, we have had so much help.
Okay, that's fantastic.
But then at the same time, it's no one can help you with the emotional side of it. You know, like, no one can help you. And the thing is then, you don't want to constantly be meeting people and telling them about it, because that eventually, you know, people eventually stop asking, how are you then? Because they're like, oh, they're only doom and gloom. You know, it's always, and we never have good news, never. And people will always say, I could, like last week when that letter came in, you know, within an hour, I was at the school gate and people were like, how are you? Great, marvellous. People don't, you know, you can't meet people and then just load that on them, you know. So you kind of, you choose a few people to talk to about it, and then you try not to talk to them constantly about it, because you don't want them dragging them down, you know.
And Gillian, you said you came, you did come off the tablets for a while, and you explained it brilliantly that you went on the antidepressant, the anxiety tablets to try and dull the sense of stress that you were going through, and that was felling you, that was bringing you down, but also that it flattens other emotions as well, as you say, you can't pick the emotions. Okay, did you decide at any stage to come back or try and get off those tablets?
I did, yeah. Last May, I actually made a decision, because, you know, being locked in the house, being in bed, you know, barely functioning for the children, it was so unfair, they needed a mother. So I actually came off them, and I was doing really well. Like, bad days, still had bad days. I'm not saying that I was better, but I remember being off them a week, and I swear to God, and this might sound stupid, I actually heard a bird sing, and I went, oh my God, I haven't heard a bird sing in so long. You know, and then when this letter came in on the 14th of January, I hit rock bottom. And to be honest, Joe, suicide was the forefront of my mind. And I was at such a low place that I didn't even think of my husband. I just thought I wanted it over. And if I had got a moment alone without anyone around, I don't think I'd be here talking.
But you are here talking and you're here fighting. Your letter is a powerful, powerful letter. It really is. This is the letter you sent to them. I'm just wondering who read it. I'd love to know who read it because it's such a powerful letter, Gillian. Brilliantly written.
Yeah. Luckily enough, I did get to the doctor then.
Okay.
And I'm dosed up again.
And you will again if you need to. You know you've come through that moment and you will come through it again.
Yeah. But I just want to say, Joe, because my battery's going low. Over the weather. I just want to say we have an absolute angel of a person helping us. I don't want to mention his name, but he knows who he is.
He's an angel.
We were strangers to him when this happened. Everyone on our payroll, like accountants, the whole lot, jumped ship. The money wasn't there to pay them.
Yeah.
And this guy heard of our plight, total stranger. He has given time with his children, from his family. Every day he goes through the struggle with us.
Yeah.
He talks at the bank every day. He has travelled everywhere we've had to go with the bank. And he does so much for us. He's there at 11 at night if we need to call. He's there constantly. He basically now took over the whole mediation because we couldn't cope with it anymore. And this man has never, ever taken a brass cent off us in 4 years.
Okay.
And I just want to say there is genuinely fantastic people out there. And he's dedicating his life to try and sort this for us, you know. And I just want to say thank you so much to him because we wouldn't be here where we are now only for him, you know.
And he sees in you what people hear in you now.
Yeah.
That goodness and that desire you feel flat, and I know you feel flatter at certain moments, but also you have that, you've been going through it for 5 years. You have to keep going, Gillian, which I know you will. You know the reason.
Oh, I know, yeah.
You know the
yeah.
reason why you have to keep going. And that, as you say, that angel who came into your lives has also seen what people are hearing now, and that is that there is light at the end of this tunnel. I know you'll say, where is the light? But there is light at the end of the tunnel, and the light is in the power of the people around you, your children and your husband, that man you talked about, the family who helped you, all those people who helped turn that garage into a home.
Yeah.
Now, I'm very conscious, because you said it just a few seconds ago that your battery is going to go and you've children, so that the phone is more important for those.
Yeah.
Those things and talking to me at this stage. But Gillian, we will talk to you afterwards, one, about the power of this letter and if there's anything we can do to try and get a wider circulation. Obviously, we're taking out names and that to
yeah.
this letter. I think people should really, really hear it. It is a letter from the heart of Ireland in 2014 from a brilliant, brilliant person, and that is you, Gillian.
Thanks very much, Joe.
Okay.
And listen, thanks for allowing us to come on.
No, thanks for making it. You mind yourself.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Gillian. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.